I'm coming your way live from Jerusalem. Let's do it right now.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire, live from Jerusalem. This is Michael Brown. I am delighted to be with you. Number is the same as always, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Maybe you just need to vent a little. Maybe you need to get some things off your chest. Maybe you're just grieved and upset with what's happened in America. Maybe you're trying to plot the course. What do we do now? How do we live? Phone lines are open, 866-348-7884. Those of you who feel the church shouldn't be in the culture wars at all, those of you who think that we've done more harm than good, you can give your perspective to 866-34-TRUTH. I want to give you some updates from ministry here, but of course talk about what's happened in the States. I hope you were helped by last night's broadcast. I've got some really good reports from listeners. I really did my best to get out a number of key issues with the Supreme Court's disastrous ruling. Of course, I wrote an article thanking Justice Kennedy. You say thanking him? Yeah, for galvanizing opposition, for galvanizing the pro-marriage movement, just as the Roe v. Wade decision galvanized the pro-life movement, for confirming what we've said for years, namely that gay activism is the principal threat to freedom of religious speech and conscience, and for demonstrating that once you redefine marriage, you render it meaningless. All that is in Justice Kennedy's majority opinion. But I do want to give you some ministry updates from Israel as well. But before I do that, and before I take your calls, and later in the broadcast we'll bring on an attorney from the Alliance Defending Freedom to give us further insights, I want to tell you honestly, I've been a little overwhelmed on this trip. I mean it in a positive way. I mean it in a way that I'm kind of humbled and almost speechless. I'm talking about leader after leader, senior leaders, people who've been missionaries in the Muslim world for decades, Jewish believers who've been laboring in the land for years and years, leader after leader after leader, coming up to me, some with tremendous sincerity, looking me right in the eyes and thanking me from different nations, thanking me for the voice that we're bringing and the stand that we're taking on moral and cultural issues. This is from international leaders. These are evangelists. These are missionaries. These are soul winners. And they recognize the critical importance of standing strong in the midst of moral insanity. And they recognize the role America plays. They are brokenhearted. They are grieved. Some of them Native Americans, some not. They are terribly grieved. And I'm just blessed and humbled by the role that we've been able to have. Thank you for being part of our team, our network. You know, our Facebook page has just gone completely exponential. It started as I was on my way to Israel. And take that as a little bit of a sign in terms of God's favor and God's priorities. But all of you who've shared one of my posts, our team has been working diligently to get as many relevant posts up, powerful quotes, even different times of the day and night for our international audience as well on Facebook. I just talked to another international leader, major media ministry. She said, oh, I watch everything you post on Facebook. I follow you there. Young people, old people coming up to me. But this is last week. So if you shared something I posted, if you commented on it, if you liked it, this last week, friends, we've reached just under 49 million people through the Facebook page. We've had over 4.5 million actively engaged on the page. We're making a difference. We're making a difference.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire as we come your way live from Jerusalem. I wanted to play a clip. I wanted to play an audio clip. I was just looking at so many other things online. Tell you what, Joey, just grab clip number one. I wanted to play it at the beginning of the segment, but it's a shameful. If you voted for President Obama, you should drop your head in shame over this quote. As we come your way live from Jerusalem, clip number one, the president's reaction to the Supreme Court decision.
This morning, the Supreme Court recognized that the Constitution guarantees marriage equality. In doing so, they've reaffirmed that all Americans are entitled to the equal protection of the law, that all people should be treated equally, regardless of who they are or who they love.
What an inane statement, with all respect to the office of the president. It's an utterly inane statement. The Constitution doesn't guarantee anybody any particular right based on who they love. That is a complete modern construct. As Chief Justice Roberts said, if you want to rejoice, to paraphrase, over what you think is, you know, positive movement, whatever, fine, but leave the Constitution out of it. This has nothing to do with the Constitution. There is no possible legal basis for this in the Constitution to redefine marriage. Please. And if you want to be consistent, then whoever you love, that's who you love. There could be no restriction. How can you, if you love three people, who can restrict that? You have a constitutional right. If you love your own brother, you're a guy and you love your own brother and you want to be together and have that recognized by the government, you now allegedly have a constitutional right. Well, no one's saying that. Well, why not? These statements are so far beneath the office of the president. But listen. There's a reason we warned you before he was elected. You think it's because I had an axe to grind? I'm not a politically minded person. In other words, I know what's happening. Obviously, these are major issues, who's in office, but I'm not a politically minded person. I'm not well connected with political leaders. I don't work behind the scenes with political leaders. If God opens doors for me to dialogue with them or give input, as happens sometimes, I'm very glad to do it. But I'm not a registered Republican or a registered Democrat. I'm independent. I don't align myself with either party, although overwhelmingly the party platform of the Republicans much more reflects my values than the platform of the Democrats. But then you've got the establishment in each side that thwarts so many things. Well, let's just say the Republican establishment thwarts a lot of conservative moral things from happening. But when I warned that President Obama would be the most activist, pro-gay, pro-abortion president in our nation's history, it was based on the words of his own mouth. And when he lied, according to David Axelrod, his right-hand political man, when he lied in order to be elected, knowing that many of the people he wanted to appeal to had conservative moral values, especially in the black Christian community, he knew the high family standards and the conservative moral values among them, that he contradicted what he had earlier put in writing and lied about his views on marriage. And then when the time was right, came out and said what he really believed. David Axelrod said he was longing to do it for a while. Look, remember, after saying marriage is a union of one man and one woman, he then declares June Gay Pride Month and invites gay activists into the White House and says, this is your house and we're going to see your goals realized. There's a reason, friend, we warned. Here, look. And by the way, I am not the least bit discouraged, because we were quite confident these things were going to happen, and we're quite confident that God is going to move in the midst of it. It's grievous, it's ugly, it's horrific, it's terrible, it's tragic. The consequences are going to be disastrous, but it's not the end of the story. It's a dark day, but it's not the final day. Listen to what Professor Robert Gagnon wrote, a New Testament scholar, in 2007. He was talking about gay activist goals in ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And he said this, 2007, the bill will virtually codify you as a bigot, so far as the federal government is concerned, if you oppose homosexual practice on moral grounds, if ENDA passed with its various LGBT safeguards, and of course the president pushed that through on his own, basically. Professor Gagnon said the biggest fallout from the bill is the establishment of, quote, sexual orientation, defined as homosexuality, heterosexuality, or bisexuality, as a specially protected category of federal law. As sure as night follows day, he said, this will be the proverbial foot in the door by proponents of homosexual practice that will lead, eventually but irrevocably, to, quote, gay marriage, mandated by the U.S. Supreme Court. This is what Professor Gagnon said in 2007. A nationally enforced indoctrination of children into the homosexualist agenda in schools and the criminalizing of opposition to homosexual practice at the national level. We've been warning, friends. 2003, Christian attorneys Alan Sears and Craig Austin of the Alliance Defending Freedom published their important book, The Homosexual Agenda, exposing the principal threat to religious freedom today. This is 2003. That's one of the first books I read when God called me to get involved in these issues. So all I'm saying is we've been warning. We've been speaking the truth in love. We've been encouraging the church to wake up and recognize what's happening. Now that it's happening, I hope I have your ear, because we have strategies, because long-term, I believe that gay activism has within itself the seeds of self-destruction. I believe long-term God's ways will prevail. If Jesus doesn't come first, we will see a turning of the tide. But look, just consider, and I've made mistakes. I've voted for people and afterwards regretted it. We've all made mistakes. We stood for certain things and then grew and matured and realized we made mistakes. I'm not condemning anyone. I would bring a correction, though, to those who refused to hear just because they wanted to vote a certain way, whatever that way was. But isn't it shameful that Friday morning, President Obama is at the funeral for Pastor Clemente Pinckney, the pastor slaughtered in cold blood in the massacre in Charleston, and singing Amazing Grace and praising this pastor and state congressman as a good man, which according to reports, he was a wonderful man, father and husband and leader, praising him. Well, hang on. This man helped stand for the amendment in South Carolina saying that marriage is a union of a man and a woman. Isn't it a little bit hypocritical to be singing Amazing Grace in the morning and praising him and then lighting up the White House in gay colors at night? I've grieved over things I've done. I've grieved over people I voted for or stands that I took, you know, many years back and realized, okay, that was erroneous. I made a mistake. Nothing wrong with saying we blew it. God help us not blow it again, especially before the next elections come. All right, I've got a lot to talk about, and I do want to encourage you. I do want to talk more about strategy as well. Let me grab a call first. We'll go to Washington, D.C. Michael, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, sir. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. My question was in the form of I was saying to your coworker that isn't America uniquely built? I am in opposition of same-sex marriage. I firmly believe that God's word intends for man and woman to marry one another. I firmly believe that. But even though I believe that, when I look at America, the way it was established, and correct me or help me if I need help. Correct me if I need correction. But isn't America designed with a promise of saying we offer freedom? If you choose not to honor God, you still can live out the American dream, not believing in a God, not honoring a God, just totally rejecting the gospel. So doesn't that sort of, since homosexuality has been on the earth as far as we can track history, wouldn't America provide freedom for homosexuals based on the way it was set up?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. First, Michael, you're absolutely right. You could be a Jew, you could be a Muslim, you could be a Catholic, you could be a Protestant, you could be an atheist, and you had freedom here in America to practice or not practice your faith or non-faith, to have a business, to be elected in various offices. regardless. So, yes, that's true. That's part of our foundation. However, we had very strict laws about moral conduct. Homosexual practice was universally considered a crime against nature by our founding fathers and was categorically condemned in every state in the Union. So there were practices that were forbidden. In a time past in America, something like adultery would have been punished. So as it is, though, people are free to do what they want. In other words, yeah, I'm all for people are free to do what they want. The law's not going to punish someone for a man sleeping with his girlfriend if they're both 20 years old. The law's not going to punish someone if a man leaves his wife, commits adultery. It's terrible, but he's not going to jail for it. Same way the law wasn't going to punish someone for a man sleeping with another man. But to call it marriage, ah, that's the problem. Stay there.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us. 866-34-TRUTH. This is Michael Brown. I am coming your way live from Jerusalem. We continue to talk about the Supreme Court's disastrous decision last week, one that is grievous but does not have me discouraged. We were expecting this. We're expecting this, and we are looking forward to God working in the midst of it, awakening his church in the midst of it. So, Michael in D.C., back to your question. Yes, we have freedom of choice in America, but not for everything. In other words, we have laws on the books that a man is not free to have a sexual relationship with his grown daughter, even if it's consensual. You go to jail for that. So there are certain choices you can't make and certain you can. A man could sleep with his girlfriend, both 20 years old, nothing illegal about it. These days, quite acceptable. But you have a kid out of wedlock. That's not illegal either. There's many choices you can make, but then other choices you can't make, obviously. So the issue here is the Supreme Court calling this marriage. That is issue number one. Redefining marriage, you now make it meaningless. Case in point, U.S. News is now reporting. Polyamorous rights advocates see marriage equality coming for them. If the majority is willing to take the big leap, it's hard to see how it can say no to the shorter one. That's Cody Brown, sister wives. Polygamy, why not? They're absolutely right to say polygamy is a shorter jump than homosexual, quote, marriage. So now by redefining it, you open the door to all these others. But of course, I mean, how can you not? No one's ever been able to say why it's just limited to two people if it's not a man and a woman. So that's the problem, number one, Michael. It is saying that this is marriage and the court somehow finding a constitutional right, completely bogus, lawless, reckless. Number two, this is now taking away the rights of all Americans who oppose these things. Just watch and see what's coming. People who cannot go along with this out of conscience. Remember, much of America's foundation is based on freedom of religion and freedom of conscience. That is now being overruled by a renegade court and a renegade president and others. That is the problem. 866-34-2. Thank you, sir, for the call and the spirit in which you presented your question. Look, I'm getting tweets from people saying people like you belong in prison. People like you belong in prison. Hey, Time Magazine, and I'm going to post an article tomorrow night on WorldNet Daily, I believe. That's where I'll probably put it out, called It Begins. Yeah, or it may have a different name when it comes out. But Time Magazine, a couple days ago, Mark Oppenheimer, who writes the biweekly beliefs column for the New York Times, he's penned an op-ed piece for Time Magazine titled, Now's the Time to End Tax Exemptions for Religious Institutions. And we've been talking about this for years. This is the obvious next step. Quote, the Supreme Court's ruling on gay marriage makes it clearer than ever that the government shouldn't be subsidizing religion and nonprofits. We've been telling you, friends, there's a reason we've been sounding the alarm. You say to me, you didn't give the Israel update yet. I will. It's good reports from ministry here, but I just want to get to these issues first. If you miss any of the broadcast, I'm going to be talking about these things for two full hours. I have a guest on from the Alliance Defending Freedom in a few minutes. Any part of the broadcast you missed, just go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest broadcast. All right. I think this is very timely. I worked for several years on a commentary in the book of Jeremiah, published in the Expositor's Bible Commentary Series. It's about 550 pages long. They let me go over the limit of what I was supposed to write. I bring in both Jewish and Christian sources for background. I really tried to give the reader the heart of the prophet and to get in the skin of the prophet to feel the world and see the world through his eyes. So the commentary is a beautiful, beautifully produced commentary. It comes along with commentaries on Lamentations and Ezekiel by other top scholars. Overall, it's over 900-page, beautiful hardcover volume. When you order it this week, I want to sign it for you. I'm going to put in a scripture reference. And we're giving you free my debate, my classic debate with my dear friend and colleague, Dr. James White, on predestination, election, and the will of God. I think that's a $20 value. You'll get that free. So why don't you order now? I think it's timely that we get the Jeremiah commentary into people's hands. What do you say? 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to the website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. You can actually see what the book looks like. I show you on a video, tell you more about it, and we tell you about the DVD as well. That's askdrbrown.org. Let's go to Matthew in Springfield, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Awesome. I really enjoyed your show. God bless you. My question is on this, the gay marriage. What impact do you see it's going to have on 501 churches that cannot discriminate federal law and keep their tax exempt status? Are we going to start seeing couples coming into churches and forcing a decision whether or not they're going to discriminate against marrying them and violating their faith, or losing their tax-exempt status?
Yes, sir. These are very real questions. We've been expecting this for some time now, that this would be the first thing potentially to go. For many Christian schools that operate on a shoestring budget, for many ministries, this could be the difference between staying in operation and not, because this is the system they've operated under all these years. I just noted Mark Oppenheimer, a columnist with New York Times, wrote a piece for Time magazine saying now's the time to end tax exemptions for religious institutions. In the next segment, I'm going to be speaking with an attorney from the Alliance Defending Freedom who will be able to address these questions directly as well. But just the fact that there's already talk about this, there's so much bigotry and hostility and anger towards the church in America right now, so much hostility towards godly values and biblical values, so much demonizing of believers, that this is just in the air. And then certainly you're going to have cases where people agitate. I've already documented both in England and in America, gay couples going to either the Church of England or Methodist Church in America, neither of which recognize the same-sex, quote, marriage in their bylaws, and saying, we were hurt by your decision. We were hurt by your refusal to, quote, marry us, and we're going to agitate over this, even though the church has a policy against it. So expect the agitation to come. I have said, sir, for some time now, that just like Haman and Mordecai, that even though everybody else bowed down to Haman, he wasn't satisfied unless Mordecai bowed. And gay activists, no, they don't want to kill us like Haman decided to kill the Jews, but gay activists won't be satisfied as long as the church can have a fully government-recognized exemption. But I'm here to declare that Mordecai will not bow.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown coming your way live from Jerusalem. I'm so glad to have on the air with me attorney Douglas Wardlow. He serves as legal counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom. He plays a key role in their marriage and family team. And obviously, this is a very busy time for ADF and other Christian organizations working for marriage. Doug, thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure to be on with you.
Now, Doug, it was some years ago that one of your colleagues, a dear friend of mine, Joe Infranco, gave a presentation at my home church and at our school and said that there was going to be a major case that reached the Supreme Court and that it was going to likely be a 5-4 decision with Justice Anthony Kennedy being the swing vote. And initially, it was the overturning of the Defense of Marriage Act, but now leading to the Supreme Court's disastrous decision. But you and your team have known for some years that this day was coming. So everyone's grieved, everyone's saddened over this tragic turn that our government, our nation has taken. But this is not catching you off guard. That being said, what is the attitude, what's the emotional attitude among you and your team seeing such unprecedented, horrific decisions being made?
Well, yeah, this is definitely not something that's catching us off guard. I mean, you can see the culture going this direction. You know, we've seen it going this direction for quite some time, for many years all of us have. So it's nothing. There's nothing shocking about it, but when it actually happens, when you have the Supreme Court of the United States overturn God's truth about marriage and disaffirm the freedom of the people to affirm the truth about marriage and law, when you see that happen, when you see them undermine the rule of law in the way they did and basically deconstruct the rule of law and the separation of powers, and with really very little legal reasoning, it's a disturbing thing. So everyone is rightly lamenting the problems that are going to flow from this and the terrible loss that we've all suffered as a nation here.
Yeah,
but also we're encouraged going forward because we know that in the end, victory is Christ's.
Absolutely,
and we just continue to work.
Absolutely. All right. So a few things to break down. We've got a short segment here, and then one more where we can talk it a bit more at length. But why is the decision penned by Justice Roberts so utterly unconstitutional, and as the Attorney General of the state of Texas said, actually lawless?
Oh yes, Justice Kennedy's opinion is completely lawless. It is because it doesn't actually apply any legal principles. It doesn't cite to cases that have doesn't cite to good case law for any of the propositions it presents. It talks about liberty in an abstract and vague sense. It throws out truisms and platitudes and all sorts of sonorous phrases that really don't have any content or meaning. And then it just combines them together. It talks about the due process clause and it talks about equal protection, but it does so in a way that isn't really intelligible. And really, the reasoning could be used to support any number of different outcomes. But it appears that they employed a reasoning to reach the end that they wanted to reach. And that's problematic because that's not how legal reasoning, that's not how jurisprudence should be done. And we're a country based on laws, not based on the whim or will of men. And that's what this opinion seems to be.
And is there anything within the intended role of the Supreme Court that they can define a new reality of marriage?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's unthinkable that they should be able to do that because, first of all, marriage, of course, pre-exists the state. Marriage is something that comes before and that the state just recognizes. So it doesn't make any sense to say that liberty includes a right to change the definition of marriage, and there is no power of the court to do that because, of course, marriage is not mentioned in the Constitution, and there is no understanding of liberty that you can derive from the history and tradition of our nation that would lead you to the conclusion the court did. So the court just basically said, you know, based on our reasoned judgment, we think liberty's meaning should change, and here's the new meaning.
And here's the new meaning. And the new meaning now, as you said, all possible outcomes. In fact, you can make a better case for polygamy based on Judge Roberts' reasoning than you can for same-sex, quote, marriage. We'll be back with Doug Wardlow from the Alliance Defending Freedom.
God of burning, cleansing flame, send the fire.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's really the culmination of decades of lawsuits over gay rights in general and more specifically about marriage. It's also a sign of the really breathtakingly fast change in the social norms of the United States.
That was Mark Sherman, Associated Press reporter, talking about the Supreme Court's stunning, miserable decision. Again, I'm not disheartened. I'm grieved, but not disheartened. We were expecting this outcome and are confident God's ways will ultimately triumph. I'm speaking with Doug Wardlow of the Alliance Defending Freedom. Doug, I was asked a question in the segment right before you came on by a caller wondering about churches, 501c3, tax-exempt status. Mark Oppenheimer in Time Magazine has said it's time to end tax exemptions. I know this is something I've spoken with attorney friends in the recent past. What are the implications for this? As things currently stand, what are the implications for tax exemptions and religious freedoms, both for churches and then just freedoms for individuals outside of a church context?
Mm-hmm. Well, for tax-exempt status, I think you know, there are no immediate impacts, but the argument may be made, and I think it could be coming, that churches and other religious entities, schools, what have you, might be in danger of having their tax-exempt status lost. If you just consider that during the oral arguments on this case, the Solicitor General of the United States was asked by, mm-hmm. I think, Justice Sam Alito,
yep.
Whether this would be an issue, and he said it would be an issue. It certainly would be an issue, and he wouldn't deny that it would be an issue. So right there, you know that this is a possibility. But just think about what the Supreme Court did in its decision. It invented a new constitutional right to same-sex marriage based in fundamental liberty, where there is no reference to such a right anywhere in the Constitution or anywhere in any concept of liberty that has been as it's been understood in our country since its foundation. So they created that new right. Now, that demeans anyone who holds a contrary view, because now if you hold the traditional view of marriage, that marriage is... And the truth about marriage, that marriage is a union of one man and one woman for life, that is contrary to the view of marriage that the court has enshrined in the Constitution. So that gives the government a reason to strip tax-exempt status and other benefits away from religious institutions. And, of course, it also fuels the fires of those who would seek to persecute and to impose their view of marriage on others. So we should expect to see more lawsuits against people like Baron L. Stutzman in Washington State, who mm-hmm. has been sued and is being prosecuted under their non-discrimination law for purportedly violating that law because she refused to provide flowers from her floral shop for a same-sex ceremony. And she faces very, very large attorney's fees now on that and could even lose her business. So we should expect to see more of that because what this court has done is essentially legitimize one particular view of marriage and enshrine it in the Constitution. And anything that opposes that is therefore demeaned.
You know, it was some years back, I was speaking with a colleague of yours, and I said that those who came out of the closet in the late 60s fighting for, in their mind, equality, liberty, tolerance, those who came out of the closet want to put us in the closet. And he said, Mike, there's one more part of the cycle. They went to prison in the early days for what they did. He said, they'll want to put us in prison. Well, I happened to reference that on a Christian TV show and got vilified. Gay activists, straight allies vilified me almost in hysterical terms. Like, no one is ever going to put you in prison for not agreeing with, you know, just the insanity of it. Well, the moment the Supreme Court announced their decision, I'm noticing tweets coming into me, coming in basically saying people like you need to be punished and justice needs to come to you. We had a post on Facebook, God's Design for Marriage, and then someone posted, God's Design for Christian Haters is to end up in prison. Just the fact the rhetoric is out there indicates that now people actually believe, as much as we don't recognize the Supreme Court's decision, others do, from the president down, and they're saying, it's done now. This is it. Get with the program or get out of here. So it's a certain hostility, overt national hostility to Christian values and biblical principles beyond anything I've ever seen. So yeah. That would mean that's kind of in the air. There's going to be a lot more attempt to nail Christians who hold to biblical values.
That's right. And those, and the attempts that have gone on, that are ongoing, they've been legitimized now. They've basically been stamped by the Supreme Court with the blessing of the Constitution, the highest law of our land. And, of course, law has a teaching function. Law not only follows culture, but it also shapes culture. So now culture has shaped law to the extent that, and our institutions to the point where those institutions have broken and they're not functioning properly. And as a result, the Supreme Court has been able to change the law, but then that will in turn have an effect on the culture. So it's a sort of a feedback loop that is not good. It's a downward spiral kind of cycle. So as people absorb the message the Supreme Court is sending about marriage, basically that traditional marriage is not the correct view of marriage, and anyone that insists on that view is somehow bigoted or is not thinking properly, that will encourage others to embolden others to seek to impose their views where perhaps they wouldn't have before. So it's a very disturbing result here, but really it reflects a long, an ongoing cultural shift where we've sort of forgotten the founding principles of our country and the connection of those principles to Judeo-Christian values.
Right, and the idea that somehow the quote right for two men or two women to be together in quote marriage and have that recognized by the government, that trumps religious freedoms, would not just have been unthinkable to the founding fathers. It would have been utterly repulsive thought right. to the founding fathers.
Absolutely.
And it's just go ahead.
I was just saying, absolutely. That's exactly right. It would have been repulsive to them, and it's actually contrary to the very core of our country. The first founding document of our nation, the Declaration of Independence, says that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That means that God gives and creates all of our rights and fundamental institutions, and then government comes in and protects and recognizes those rights and institutions and duties, so duties and correlative rights. Now, what the Supreme Court has said is no, something is dignified and has value, a relationship, a right, an institution, only if government says so. Because what were the petitioners here asking for? They were asking for the government to bless their relationships with the title of marriage, to confer a dignity on them. But government doesn't create institutions, government doesn't create marriage, government doesn't create rights. And if you get into if you accept the premise of the petitioners that the government does create dignity and rights and is at the root of all of our fundamental rights and institutions, that's contrary to the Declaration of Independence, and that means that the government can also take away those rights, which is a very mm-hmm. disturbing thing to think about. So this has broader implications for individual liberty in general as well.
Yeah, and again, when we know what the founding fathers thought about homosexual practice, and we know when the 14th Amendment, when that was ratified, as I believe Justice Scalia pointed out, that every state had laws against homosexual practice. Now you're going to quote these documents and somehow find a constitutional right for the relationship is again mind-boggling. But right. We just got about 2 minutes. I know you've got to run as well. But last question. I'm one of the signers, along with many, many others, along with Mike Huckabee and Rick Santorum, saying that we will not recognize a new definition of marriage. Mm-hmm. In my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, one of the principles we live by is we refuse to redefine marriage. On the legal front, on your end, aside from praying and trusting God, what are you counseling people? And is the goal ultimately to get new members of the Supreme Court and have this overturned? Is there a strategy that is formulating now?
I think there is a strategy that's formulating. I think there are a lot of different options. One good thing about, well, if there is any silver lining of this, you know, it galvanizes yes. Our side to take action, to finally realize and see what's going on with our Supreme Court and with our culture and with our government and how those things are related. So I think that there's an opportunity here to make some fundamental changes and to push back, whether that means an Article 5 constitutional convention, whether that means changing the way the Supreme Court is appointed, whether that means retention elections for judges. There are a lot of different ideas out there, but I think they should be considered. And then also we just need to continue to proclaim the truth about marriage, and that's more important now than ever. And we need to continue to fight for religious liberty in the courts, as Alliance Defending Freedom will continue to do, because the First Amendment and the guarantee of free exercise of religion is foundational. It's really our first freedom, and that should not and cannot be trumped by what the court invented on Friday.
Yes, well, I'm with you on all of that. We're praying that God would give you wisdom, that God would give Alan Sears and the team plans of attack. You're obviously going to be busier than you've ever been with challenge after challenge after challenge coming and people needing legal help. But we know ultimately Jesus is Lord. Victory is the Lord's. We care about all people. We care about those who identify as LGBT, but we're not going to redefine marriage, and we're not going to bow down to a lawless decision by the courts. Thank you for all you do, and may God's grace sustain you.
Thank you, and you too.
All right. Friends, we've got one more segment before this first hour is out. Live from Jerusalem, stay right here, 866-34-TRUTH.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This ruling will strengthen all of our communities by offering to all loving same-sex couples the dignity of marriage across this great land. This decision affirms what millions of Americans already believe in their hearts. When all Americans are treated as equal, we are all more free.
First, this will make it unequal for those holding to biblical values, those holding to God's design for marriage, those holding to marriage as it's always been. It will now bring inequality there. That's the first thing. Second thing, you can't make marriage into something it is not just by changing the word. If you refer to me as a giraffe, if you refer to me as a cat, if you refer to me as a table, if you refer to me as an automobile, I'm none of the above, no matter what term you put on it. You see, what about the dignity of couples that love each other? Whatever dignity they have is between themselves and God. If it's not for society to convey or not convey, and if this is what God designed a human being for, a man to be with a man or a woman to be with a woman, they don't need societal affirmation. Of course, it's not, and therefore can never be legitimate, can never be marriage, no matter how loving it is. But again, there's no substance to what the president is saying, because he's going to have to say the exact same thing about every other, quote, loving relationship that wants to be recognized by the government. Otherwise, it's going to be completely arbitrary. And it's just going to be one group that advocates louder and longer, and then it's going to be capitulation. At which point, by redefining marriage, you render it meaningless. Go ahead and pre-order my book on Amazon, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, Where Homosexual Activism is Really Going and How to Turn the Tide. We anticipated the Supreme Court would go in this direction. It's all part of the principles in the book. Principle number one, never compromise your convictions. Principle number four, refuse to redefine marriage. We knew this was coming, friends, and there are strategies by which we can outlast the activism while continuing to walk in love towards all people. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Boston, Massachusetts. Louise, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, doctor. I actually left the church in Cambridge. I'm not going to mention it, but they were seemed to be a very liberal church and wanted to marry gay couples and to encourage other churches to do that. But it's like it says right in Leviticus that it's an abomination. Now, I know people that are gay. I have no problem with them, getting married. Like, let's say, for instance, by a justice of the peace. But if you're going to try to force a church to go against their principles and what they believe in, that's wrong. That's like, wait, are you going to go to a mosque and do that? I don't think so. So,
I mean, there are a number of things that you said, and sorry to hear about the church departing from biblical values. Obviously, if we quote Leviticus, people will challenge us to say, well, do you live by the dietary laws? I mean, I happen to, but just because of what I eat.
Yeah.
But the simple answer is God gave certain laws to Israel to keep them separate from the nations, like food laws and things like that. And then he gave laws to Israel, which are universal moral principles for all people, which include in Leviticus 18, when you read the chapter from beginning to end, this was for all people, Egyptians, Canaanites, Israelites. And the law specifically said that there was not to be incest, adultery, bestiality, homosexual practice. These were things that were listed as forbidden. And the one that was the abomination of the abominations in terms of the list, or detestable practice among detestable practices, was homosexual practice, reinforced throughout the New Testament. But even without Scripture, if you just go by natural law, and when you understand that the government gets involved with marriage for purposes of procreation and drawing a child to a mother and father, only marriage as God designed it can do that. I personally have a problem with even going to a justice of the peace, because you're still legitimizing something that should not be legitimized. And then when you make it legal, you codify as bigots those who don't agree with your position. But yes, I do believe that this will be coming, that there will be attempts to get different churches, different groups to form, quote, a marriage. And when the pastor refuses, says he can't do it in good conscience, then that church gets taken to court. Now, right now, theoretically, there should be protection. But look, things are going at kind of space rocket speed, just this mega speed of transforming society in negative ways. Now, the positive is, if it could fall this quickly, it could recover this quickly. Because when it's almost like building something 100 stories high and a foundation only ready to hold 20. At a certain point, you keep going and the thing's going to collapse. So gay activism will not be sustained in long-term culture or already. And thank you for the call. Already, there are gay activists that talked about, boy, we missed the battle. This is our whole thing, and being this oppressed minority. And now, do we just fit in with the crowd? I just got this note, something I've gotten 2-3 times a week for some years now. It is the Gay Politics Report. It used to have a different name, then changed to Gay Politics Report. It says, from the Victory Fund and Institute, Victory has been proud to bring you Gay Politics Report for more than a decade. We thank you for your faithful readership. LGBT politics have changed significantly since we published the first issue back in 2004, a year when 11 votes in 11 states passed amendments banning marriage equality, and Don't Ask, Don't Tell was still the law of the land. Today, marriage equality is on the march across the globe, and more openly LGBT people are serving government than ever before. As the political landscape has evolved, Victory has developed new cutting-edge tools to train and elect LGBT leaders. While this will be our last issue of this newsletter, I invite you to begin a fresh dialogue with us this fall. So what they're saying is, hey, the victories have been achieved. Now we're moving on to other things. Well, what are some of those other things going to be? Could it be fighting against those that stand for marriage as God intended it, refusing to acknowledge the rightness of the Supreme Court decision? Could it be that that's where the energies go next, as well as trying to coerce other nations to go in the same direction? Hey, your guess is as good as mine, but I tell you, a lot of this is going to unfold in front of our eyes. All right, friends, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and check out this week's special resource offer. We'll tell you about the commentary I wrote on the book of Jeremiah, one that I believe will really enrich your study of the book, but more importantly, will get the heart of the prophet burning in your own heart and open up the message of Jeremiah. We need the church to rise up as a prophetic voice today. So on the video, if you click on the home page to find out more about it, we'll tell you more about the commentary, the other books that it comes with, the commentary on Lamentations and Ezekiel by other scholars. So overall, 923 pages total, beautiful hardcover. And when you get it, we're giving you free the debate that I had with my dear friend, Dr. James White, on predestination, election, and the will of God. That DVD we're sending you free. And I'm signing the commentary. We don't do this a lot, but we want to just bless it and make it more valuable to you. So I'll be signing it as well. My bottom line today, yeah, I know there are a lot of dark clouds and rain, and it's overcast, spiritually speaking. But hey, Jesus still rules and reigns, and the sun is going to shine. I'm coming your way live from Jerusalem. Let's do it right now.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is 10 in the evening here in Jerusalem, in Israel. Yeah, the center of the world. It really is. And what a place it is as well. I'm delighted to be coming your way, and I'm ready to take your calls. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I do want to give you a report from Israel, let you know what's happened in the ministry here. And thanks for all those who have been praying for us as well. 866-34-TRUTH, scheduled to fly back to the States tomorrow, then come your way live from a Messianic Jewish conference in Pennsylvania Thursday and Friday. Hopefully, if all goes well, I should be coming your way with a live audience on Thursday, which is always fun. But welcome to my world here. I'm looking at our Facebook page, which has exponentially exploded in terms of our reach in the last few days by God's grace. And I'm looking at reviews on the page. Now, they're overwhelmingly 5-star, but then we have a bunch of 1-star. So 5-star the best, 1-star the worst. So here's Ellen, 5 stars. Finally, a Christian leader who has courage and conviction. Dr. Brown's zeal and boldness is contagious. Vadim, 1 star. Completely and utterly baseless presentations with colorful and well-conveyed voiceovers, easily listening for the simple-minded. I wonder who's talking about colorful and well-conveyed voiceovers. I wonder what part that is. That's followed by 5-star. Claudia, a great servant of God. May God keep using his life for God's glory. Here's another 5-star. Thank you, Dr. Brown. This is Ida. May God bless you, uphold and sustain you as you strongly, diligently, and steadfastly protect and give a firm stand of the truth and what is right in and of a civilization and all humanity. Thank you. This is empowering. And then 1-star, Elisa. These are next to each other, one after the other. Bigoted and backwards thinking, masquerading as facts. Practice what religion truly preaches, love, acceptance, and progress. I'm sorry to see such a harmful misrepresentation of the world we live in. JP, are you sure you're a doctor, though? I thought Christians didn't believe in science or medicine or logic. And then another 5-star. Michelle, great Facebook page. Looking forward to reading one of his books. So we get the love email and we get the hate email. It all comes with the territory. But only one thing matters to me. Are we pleasing God? Are we doing what's right in his sight? Are we honoring him? If he's pleased, that's all I need to know. If I have the smile of my Father, that's all I need to know. If we're honoring him and doing what's right, then ultimately we'll be giving life, not death. Ultimately, we'll be bringing hope, not despair. Ultimately, our foundation will be based on truth, not on lies, not on deception. We will not be doing that which is pragmatic, but that which is right. I tweeted out earlier today that today the way we preach is not to bring maximum impact. Rather than preaching our message to bring maximum impact, we preach it to bring minimum confrontation. How can I water it down? How can I tone it down? How can I take away the rough edges until no one is offended? Rather than I'm going to walk in love, I'm going to pray, I'm going to care for everyone, but I'm going to speak the truth because I know that the truth is ultimately what people need to hear. And that's all you're going to get on this broadcast, the truth. And nothing but the truth. Any question or comment you have regarding the Supreme Court decision or the state of the culture of the day, give me a call. Phone lines are open, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to share some interesting articles, comments with you when we come back.
Oh, God of burning, cleansing flame. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'd be glad to debate you.
The debate I think is afraid. Over.
You're afraid of it.
I am afraid of getting queer bashed or calling.
She's not even violent right now.
Nobody's ideology supports violence.
I'm sick and tired of Christians being tolerated. You need to do something about the Christians on here. I don't feel comfortable with that.
Yep. That was a jogger, Berkeley University, University of Berkeley, California. 2013, this Christian man handing out tracts. You hear the anger and violence of his reaction. Friends, prepare for the demonization of Christians in America like we have never seen it. Let me repeat, prepare for the demonization of Christians in America like we have never seen it. It's already here. It's going to intensify. The madness of the Supreme Court decision only pushes it forward in an exponential level. Prepare for it. It's going to get ugly. That's not the end of the story. The gospel is going to move in the midst of it. And I believe God's going to use this to get the church finally getting desperate and praying and waking up to the reality. Why do you think we've been talking about revolution for all these years? Why do you think revolution has been a theme for all these years on our radio show and in writing? Why? We're not talking about the violent overthrow of the government. We're not talking about taking up arms against enemies. We're talking about radical following of Jesus in such a radical way that it has a radical impact on our culture, a gospel-based moral cultural revolution. Why do you think we've been talking about it, friends? Because we have to have it, because that is our current situation. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, Texas WorldNet Daily reports, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton on Sunday called the Supreme Court's decision, marriage ruling, lawless, and pledged to uphold religious liberties in a state and fight any attempts to use coercion that would violate the conscience of those who oppose same-sex marriage by forcing them to participate in such unions. In a blistering critique of the landmark decision, Paxton wrote, Friday, the United States Supreme Court again ignored the text and spirit of the Constitution to manufacture a right that simply does not exist. And so doing, the court weakened itself and weakened the rule of law, but did nothing to weaken our resolve to protect religious liberty and return to democratic self-government in the face of judicial activists attempting to tell us how to live. And he goes on from there. Let's go to Cranford, New Jersey. Reverend Christian, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I'm calling to express my frustration and disappointment regarding the Supreme Court's ruling last Friday. I believe that what has happened is God really awakening America, because, you know, they have been in slumber for quite some time. And I believe this is our second Babylon, okay? I think that's where we have arrived at this juncture. So the reason I believe that we have arrived in our own Babylon is because for a long, long time, the ancient Israelites didn't take God seriously, and they thought it was business as usual. But God was always warning them and warning them of the impending doom that was about to happen before they were sent into exile for 70 years. And so this is like a repeat of history. You know, I'm sorry to say that those that really voted for Obama, I'm talking about the Christians that voted for Obama, I don't know how they feel now. You know, I wish I could really gather all of them and ask them one by one how they feel right now, why they didn't see the deception that was coming with Obama. So now, you know, I hate to say this, but it's a reality.
Yep.
That they have joined the millions of Christians who voted for Obama. They have joined Obama to really kill this country. So they need to start planning the funeral and get the coffin somewhere ready. That's just my comment.
Yeah, I appreciate the comment. Our eyes need to be open to the radical decline that we are in. Our eyes need to be open to the fact that it falls at the feet of the church, that it's our responsibility, our moral decline, our lack of prayer, our lack of holiness, our lack of separation, our lack of keeping our own marriages in line, our lack of stepping up and speaking out, our decision to save our lives and reputations rather than lose our lives for the gospel and do the will of God, even if it means rejection, misunderstanding. That's why we're in the state that we're in. And yes, those who voted for President Obama bear some responsibility because he's been a key driver in making these things happen. And he did lie to constituency in order to be elected. He was on record very clearly before the elections that he stood strongly for redefining marriage. He wrote to a gay and lesbian group in California, made clear where he stood before the elections. I read the letter on radio. One African-American sister took that letter and showed it to friends of hers, and they said, "You can't believe what the media tells you." That's inexcusable. There is clear evidence as to where he stood. And his right-hand political man, David Axelrod, said, yes, he lied about his stance on marriage, saying, "Well, no, I'm Christian. It's sacred. It's the union of a man and a woman." So there is responsibility because we warned. Many people warned. This is where he's going. I prayed I'd be wrong. I was hoping I'd be wrong because I like so many things about the president and was excited that we broke through the color barrier and undid so much of our ugly past in voting for him. But I was grieved because we knew what was coming. So thank you, sir. We need to wake up. We need to wake up. 866-34-TRUTH. In the last week on Facebook, if you say, well, how come you didn't reply to me? Aside from the fact I'm in Israel with a very busy ministry schedule and traveled many hours to get here, aside from that, comments that were posted on posts on our Facebook page in the last week, I'm looking at Facebook stats right here, the comments. So either directly on our page or when others shared our links and they were commented on, comments, 332,275. Likes, 3,345,595. So if I didn't reply to you, don't take it personally, okay? Obviously, I didn't see it along with hundreds of thousands of other comments. I said all that to say this, that for a comment to get our attention to the point of making it on the radio is very, very special. So this post from David makes it on the radio where I talk about us being in a state, a place of miserable spiritual and moral decline. He writes back and says, No. The United States of America has been in a state of moral incline. The country is more moral and ethical now than it has been at any time since it was founded. Are you in one of those states where it's legal to get high, sir? Because that's not a rational comment. We have more kids being born out of wedlock. Massively. I mean, not just a little bit more, but night and day, ridiculously, massively, stats completely off the charts now than any time in our history. We have more access to sexually explicit material, including the most vile forms of pornography, kiddie porn and things like that. Epidemic of this around the country. We have slaughtered 55 million babies in the womb since Roe v. Wade, including some that made it out of the womb alive and then were killed. Human trafficking is a growing epidemic in America today. Shall I go on a little further? We have here, tell you what, contrast people going to school in early America in order to learn to read so they could read the Bible. Contrast that with trash that is on TV. Contrast that with major TV shows celebrating incest and depicting the most horrific violence imaginable and celebrating it with this crazy bloodlust we have here. Just check out a video game. What is it? Grand Theft Auto version 5. Check that out and then read about the morals in early America. Oh, in fact, tell you what, I'm going to dig this out here. I'm going to find this. I may be able to do it before the break. I want to get to your calls as well, 866-34-TRUTH. But I'm just going to find this here. Okay, I'm on my way. For Harvard University, all right, let's just see here. Here we go. When Harvard University, originally Harvard College, was founded here in 1636, students were required to be competent in Latin, able to read, write, and speak Latin prose and verse with tolerable skill and without assistance, as well as being grounded in Greek grammar in order to admit it to the school. Once they were in, oh, I got to read you the standards at Harvard College to get in the late 1600s, early 1700s. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, David, if you're listening, you had posted your comment. You posted your comment about America being the most moral it's ever been in our history. What you really meant was accepting of sexual deviancy more than it's ever been in our history, and bigoted towards biblical and Christian values more than it's ever been in our history. But if you happen to be listening, please call in 866-34-TRUTH to tell us why you made the statement that you made, that yes, I am ridiculing on the air. So this was Harvard University, which was Harvard College. All right. Let's see. No student must be absent from his studies or stated exercises for any reason unless it is first made known to the president or a tutor and by them approved, with the exception of the half hour allowed for lunch and a half hour for dinner and also for supper until 9 o'clock. So here are the laws at Harvard. No student of any class shall visit any shop or tavern to eat and drink unless invited by a parent, guardian, step-parent, or some such relative. No student shall buy, sell, or exchange anything without the approval of his parents, guardians, or tutors. All students must refrain from wearing rich and showy clothing, nor must anyone go out of the college yard unless in his gown, coat, or cloak. No one must, under any pretext, be found in the society of any depraved or dissolute person. Yeah, I noted when I wrote about that today, depraved and dissolute persons teach at some of our colleges. If any student shall, either through willfulness or negligence, violate any law of God or of this college, after being twice admonished, he shall suffer severe punishment at the discretion of the president or his tutor, but in high-handed offenses, no such modified forms of punishment need be expected. In other words, you're out. Now, in order to graduate from Harvard with just a basic degree in arts, the theology degree came later, just a basic degree in arts, the student had to be able, quote, logically to explain the Holy Scriptures, both of the Old and New Testaments, and be blameless in life and character. You're going to tell me that America is more moral today? Were our colleges being cesspools of morality where sex out of wedlock and drinking and drugs are the norm and commonplace? May God wake us up. Wow, wow, wow. 866-34-TRUTH. Reverend Bill Owens, president of the Coalition of African American Pastors, who we had on the air a couple years back, he said this, speaking of the president, he deceived the American people. This is an African American leader, because the black community would not have backed him had he come out the first time for same-sex marriage. Some people just didn't want to speak against Obama. All right, we know better now. What are we going to do? There's a whole lot of damage. Let me say to everyone who's by default voted Democrat because that's what you've done and you think it may be best for social justice or helping the poor, better reevaluate because that party has the blood of abortion on its hands. That party has the radical redefining of marriage on its hands. That party has a weak stance toward Israel on its hands. That party has what will be a wave of intolerance towards people of faith on its hands. Look, I don't know who's going to be the Republican candidate, and it could be someone that I'm not confident in at all. And even if we got the right candidate, there's the Republican establishment to be overcome. But you better believe I'm not going to vote for someone that affirms abortion and that celebrates redefining of marriage. That's not going to happen. No way. No how. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Fleming, Florida. Joe, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. How you doing?
Good. Hey, quick question. Are you listening on the radio or on internet?
I usually listen on internet.
Okay, great. Just we've got new stations in Florida. I didn't know where Fleming was, if we reached you there. But anyway, welcome to the Line of Fire, sir.
Yes, I'd like to, hopefully I'm compassionate with my response here, but I don't believe this Supreme Court ruling changes anything. I think it's a symptom. It's not the disease. There's no more sin in the world today than there was prior to the decision. It's embarrassing for our country to endorse something like this, but it doesn't change anything. And, you know, it really shows that the church is not effective or is ineffective at spreading God's truth. That's what I think this shows. The problem existed when Obama was first elected president. He's the one that put some of these people in place that made the decision. And we weren't responsible. We weren't mature spiritually at that point to vote the correct way that we now have the problems now. It's a spiritual maturity thing. It is not a Supreme Court issue.
Yeah, look, again, the responsibility falls at the feet of the church. If we had been doing our job well, if we had been articulating the truth well, if we had been living it out well, if we had not allowed marriage and sanctity of marriage to decline on our watch, if we had been more vocal as a people, if we had been more given to prayer, a lot of these things would not have happened. Now, the Supreme Court is guilty. Judge Roberts and others that voted with him are guilty of an atrocious, lawless, reckless decision that should not be recognized or obeyed. And in fact, President Obama is guilty of lying to the American people in order to get elected and then pushing for gay activist agenda in ways that go way, way beyond, I mean, light years beyond, a whole different stratosphere beyond what any other president's previously done. He's guilty. But the ultimate responsibility falls with us. And one of these days, I'll be writing an article on Judgment Begins with the House of God, where I'll lay out where we need to repent. I've said this for many years, where we need to repent first and foremost. But of course, the good news is that we can be used by God to bring about change. We can be used by God to turn things back. And it starts with our own repentance. It starts with us getting on our knees and getting on our faces and crying out to God. Joe, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. Look, when the president tweets out love is love and Christians don't know how to respond to that, that's a problem. That's a problem. I'm blessed to be doing what I'm doing. I'm in my lane. I'm functioning in my calling. I'm thriving in God, and was overwhelmed, was just communicating with Nancy about this, how overwhelmed I've been on this trip as leader after leader. I mean, senior people, influential leaders in the Jewish world, in the Muslim world, in the Christian world, as all believers in Jesus, as they've come up to me and thanked me for the articles and for the voice we provide, for radio, and tell me what it means to them that we're doing these things. But what's grievous is that I stand out as much as I do. Thank God for all the others that have been speaking on these issues before I ever did. But what's grievous is that it seems so exceptional and unusual to do this. This should just be the norm. I'm not doing anything unusual. I'm just doing basic normal stuff and addressing issues, and yet it stands out. That doesn't make me special. It means we have a lack, because this is just normal. All right, friends, we come back. I want to tell you about being a prophetic people at this time, hearing God through His Word and Spirit, and speaking truth to power. I want to talk to you about that. Take your calls. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The First Amendment is not just for churches or synagogues. It's for all Americans to freely exercise their religious beliefs everywhere, not just in the church, synagogue, or home. And that's why Justice Alito and Justice Roberts said this decision is going to be used to vilify those who believe in traditional marriage.
Yep, absolutely true. Hang on, I just, in my notes right here, they just got slightly scattered. I'll tell you who that was. Matt just posted who that was. My outline just cut off there. I was just going to something that we'll post on Facebook. It's quite a graphic. The rainbow is a symbol of God's promise, Genesis 9:13, not a symbol of Sodom and Gomorrah. Whoa, that is a very intense graphic. If you're not connected with us on Facebook, please do so. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown, on Facebook. Friends, I spent several years working on a commentary on the book of Jeremiah. That was Dr. Robert Jeffress. Should have recognized the voice. An intensive three-year period working on Jeremiah, practically lived with the book. And we've gotten great responses to the commentary. It's 550 pages long. And you don't have to know Hebrew to use it. You just have to be a serious student of the word. And it comes along with a commentary on Lamentations and one on Ezekiel. So all told, about 920 pages of commentary. Rich, eye-opening. But it'll show you what happened. Jeremiah prophesied to the nation for years and watched it fall. But ultimately, after his death, there was restoration. When you get the commentary this week, I'm signing it with a scripture reference in it just to make it more personal to you and giving you free a great debate that I did with my friend James White on predestination, election, and the will of God, one that I think you'll find really eye-opening, regardless of your perspective on it. Either way, I think you'll really enjoy it, profit by it. To find out more, go to my website, AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And when you go there, it's right on the homepage. You can click on a video that will tell you more. You can call 1-800-278-9978 or 1-800-278-9978. Let's go. I won't go there. Let's go to Springfield, Virginia. Our friend Dawood, welcome to the line of fire.
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Doing well.
Hey, wanted to real quick apologize to you. I'm deploying to Afghanistan, so hence I haven't been able to keep in contact with the gentleman. So, just real quick apology.
Got it.
I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Next week,
well, so grace on you and your deployment, sir.
Thank you. So, my question concerns with the decision happening on Friday. You know, me and many Christians, we find ourselves in a weird predicament. I guess you know, I feel as a Christian, our duty is to stand up to and to stand against what's going on in the country. At the same time, I feel that there may be levels of taking things a little bit too far. And I'll give you an example. One of my dear friends who's a Mennonite actually talked to me about this, and he said, well, as Christians, should we really be that involved in the world to change the world's laws and things like that? I believe my answer to him was yes. I mean, John the Baptist told Herod, you know, you shall not have your brother's wife. But at the same time, I can also see where he's coming from is, how do we as Christians in a daily walk, now that we do live in a country where same-sex marriage is recognized, how do we daily represent traditional marriage and the laws of God while not trying to be too assimilated into the world or taking things too far?
Yeah, I don't agree with that Mennonite position. With all respect to Mennonites and their tradition of pacifism and seeking to follow the example of Jesus in that regard, Christian involvement in law and society is fundamental. America would not be a shell of what it is today if not for that. It's part of our calling to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. Being worldly is loving carnal things. Being Christian is impacting society.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just talking about our involvement in the world, our place in the world. This is Michael Brown coming away live from Jerusalem. My last day broadcasting from Jerusalem before heading back to the States. God willing, tomorrow, 866-34-TRUTH, the number to call. But speaking with Dawood about the role of the church in society, a colleague sent me a quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer, quoting Matthew 5:10, "Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Bonhoeffer said this does not refer to the righteousness of God. It does not refer to persecution for Jesus Christ's sake. That would be explicit in the next two verses. He says it is the beatification of those who are persecuted for the sake of a just cause, and, as we may now add, for the sake of a true, good, and human cause. See 1 Peter 3:14 and 2:20. This beatitude puts those Christians entirely in the wrong who, in their mistaken anxiety to act rightly, seek to avoid any suffering for the sake of a just, good, and true cause, because, as they maintain, they could with a clear conscience suffer only explicit profession of faith in Christ. It rebukes them for their unrighteousness and narrowness, which looks with suspicion on all suffering for a just cause and keeps its distance from it. Jesus gives his support to those who suffer for the sake of a just cause. Even if this cause is not precisely the confession of his name, he takes them under his protection, he accepts responsibility for them, and lays claim to them. So, in short, the point is that we are called to be passionate about justice. What's written in Jacob, James 1:27? True religion, undefiled before God the Father, is this: to visit the fatherless and widow in their affliction, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. That's getting involved in worldly things, fatherless and the widow. And throughout the Old Testament, we're urged to advocate on their behalf, to advocate for justice on their behalf. When did it ever change that we're to pursue life and protect life? When did the mandate to do that in the Old Testament ever change? The call in Proverbs 24 to rescue those heading to the slaughter. When did that ever change? If not for Christian involvement in slavery and slave trade, there'd still be slavery and slave trade in America if Christians didn't get involved to bring about change. So we don't get worldly. We don't get caught up in loving the things of this world, and we don't get worldly in our mentality, in our mindset that puts its entire trust in the system of this age. But by all means, we absolutely get involved in this world. And we stand for justice, and we stand for what's right. It's part of our role. We are, as Martin Luther King said, not the master of the state, not the servant of the state, but the moral conscience of the state. Hey, thank you for the call, as always. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to Richmond, Virginia. Daniel, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello. How are you, Mr. Brown?
Doing well, thanks.
I just had an encouragement for the church in general.
And yes,
all I
go
can
ahead.
Tell them is that, okay, all I can tell them is that they should not be grieved or angered, but always to be rejoicing in the Lord. People ask, you know, they ask the Messiah, when we know of your coming, and Jesus told us that just as it was in the days of Noah, so will it be in the days of the Son of Man. People will be eating, drinking, marrying, and being given to marriage. After the day Noah entered the ark, then the flood came and destroyed them, as it was also the same in the days of Lot. People were eating, drinking, buying, selling, and planting, and building. But the day Lot left Sodom, fire and sulfur rained down from heaven and destroyed them all. So all I'm trying to tell the church is this: plant your feet firm and stand strong. Keep watch and pray that he may not fall. Wash your garments and fill your oil lamps, for it is the ninth month and the labor pains have begun. Do not look around at what's going around, but just look up, for your salvation is growing nigh.
Yeah, well certainly we are ultimately to have our eyes on Jesus in terms of his return as the only hope, the ultimate hope of the world. But I don't look at this as a call to abdicate. I don't look at this as a call to say it's all over it's all coming down. And we can debate the meaning of as in the days of Noah. In other words, does it mean that as it happened in Noah's day, it's going to happen at the end of the age with lawlessness and sin and wickedness? Or does it mean that as it was in the days of Noah, people were just living their lives and didn't realize that judgment was about to come? Is that what it means? That's the other way of reading it. But ultimately, our hope is in the return of Jesus, and our role, pray, win the lost, do what's right. And as opposition comes, it comes. Thank you for the call. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Richmond, Virginia. Andrew, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thank you. I love what you do. I appreciate everything, buddy. I had a question. I was in a conversation with a non-believer, and he was trying to make his case on the existence, well, the non-existence of God. And he made a statement, and he told me that we didn't need God to know right from wrong. And I wanted to see your opinion, because I didn't know how to answer that question when we were in the conversation. I told him I'd get back to him. So I just
yeah, good.
To,
yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Okay, so first question is, who determines what's right and wrong? What's the meaning of right? If there is no God, if we are just the freak accidental product of random evolution, then all we are is neurons firing. In other words, we are just material beings. So where do we get a concept of right and wrong from? Who defines that? So that's the first question. My friend Frank Turek has an excellent book called Stealing from God, in which he says that the only way an atheist can make an argument against God is to steal moral values from God, such as right and wrong. So say to him, why is there an absolute right and an absolute wrong if there is no God? Where do you even get the concept of right and wrong from? Is it wrong for a lion to eat a zebra? Is that wrong? What makes it wrong? Is it wrong for the Nazis to say they're the superior race and therefore they should dominate the world? Why is that wrong? Well, they're killing people. Well, what if they believe it's for the best? There's a famous sociologist, I forget the right term to put on him, Thomas Malthus, who years back said that the worst thing that's going to happen on the earth is overpopulation. And when we overpopulate, it's ultimately going to mean that human beings in massive numbers are going to die of starvation, and it's the worst possible scenario for the human race. So the best thing to do is not to try to fight plagues where you've got poor people in poor communities and they're susceptible to disease. Let them die off, because ultimately, as these others die off, and the weaker ones in the species die off, or the ones that don't have the ability to separate themselves from disease and hardship, as they die off, then that's a good thing for the whole human race. And his thought greatly influenced Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood. And so, again, you've got ultimately a relative morality. And even the concept of right or wrong doesn't exist unless there is an ultimate lawgiver. If we're all products of evolution, what does evolution operate under? Survival of the fittest. Survival of the fittest has nothing to do with right or wrong. So if he's honest with himself, he'll have to admit that right and wrong are just relative concepts. There is no absolute right or absolute wrong.
Right. And I kind of got back to him with the statement that what's true for me, if what's true for me is true and what's true for you is true, then if my statement says your statement is a lie, then is my statement still true? And he kind of avoided like the that question. I mean, so I was just making sure that I was in the right by saying that.
Of course. And again, it comes down to absolutes.
Right.
This whole idea of relative truth. My producer Matt pointed out to me that we've gone from moral relativism, you know, that morality is determined by how I feel about it. We've now gone to reality relativism. So from relative morality to relative reality, that reality is whatever I perceive it to be. If I perceive myself to be a bottle of water, then I'm a bottle of water. If I perceive myself to be a black Viking woman, then I'm a black Viking woman. And again, you end up just straying from truth and from absolutes when you cut God out of the picture. Now, again, just because you're right doesn't mean that people are actually going to listen to you or hear you.
Right.
There's
right.
often a real irrationality that comes with this as well. But, you know, you do your best to convey things anyway.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. Sure thing. And thanks for the good word. 866-34-TRUTH. All right. Listen, we will have time for another call or two. I got a couple of clips, audio clips I want to play for you when we come back.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us. It is my joy to be with you here on The Line of Fire. Thank you for your many words of encouragement. Be sure to visit the website, AskDrBrown.org. Check out my latest article. We'll have at least one or two more articles going up tomorrow and the rest of the week, probably writing some more. We'll have some new YouTube videos up for you probably next week as well. And 2 hours live radio every single day that we've got coming your way. So thanks for being part of the family. We're making a difference. People are hearing. They may be hating the message. They may be angry. But the message is getting out, and many are being helped and encouraged and strengthened around the world. One thing about, do you need God to argue certain points? Obviously, God working in someone's heart and making them aware of his truth and realities is the ultimate, quote, weapon that we have, obviously. And we do reason with people in certain ways, and they may hear us, they may not hear us, but we still reason. But look, I am speaking to you through my mouth right now, and that's what it was designed for. Now, it's also designed for eating. Okay, there are other things. You know, my teeth, I can grip something if I had to, or that's not primarily what they're there for. Typing at the computer during breaks with my fingers, walking back to my apartment here in Jerusalem where I'm staying for a couple of days. When I'm done, walking back with my computer and my radio equipment, using my feet to walk. So we have been designed a certain way, or for those who don't believe we've been designed at all, the body is made to function a certain way. If I tried to speak to you through my ear, nothing would happen. You'd hear nothing, and we'd have dead radio time. If I tried to type an article using my knees, you'd never read a single article that I've ever written, and on it goes. So when you look at the construction of the human body, when you look at the man and the woman, it's very clear that they were designed for each other. If you don't believe in design, that there is a function that works a certain way. And that the only way that the one thing unique about the sexual act, okay, the one thing unique about the sexual act is that you can procreate through it. In other words, it's you can hug and you don't procreate. You can kiss and you don't procreate. But intercourse, you can procreate. So there's something is happening with that, and the man has one element, the woman has the other element, there's the seed and the egg. Every gay couple is dependent on someone else of the opposite sex to bring a child into the world because they themselves cannot. Even the way things fit and were designed to fit, it's just evident that one thing works a certain way, another doesn't, which is one reason that you have a lot of health-related problems with homosexual acts that you don't with heterosexual acts. But look, another thing that happens, and we've talked about this many a time, written about it. It's in my new book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, which you can pre-order on Amazon now. And already, even 2 months and 8 days before it's going to come out, it's jumped up on a number of charts on Amazon. There's obviously a real interest in hearing about how we can outlast the gay revolution, how the gay revolution has within itself the seeds of self-destruction. But we've talked about once you redefine marriage, you render it meaningless. This was a writers' festival in Sydney, Australia. It was June 11th, 2012. I want you to hear some of the discussion here, some of the radical ideas being put forward. We'll start with clip number six.
I'm going to speak now as a gay man, and one of the things about gay male culture is that it is not a monogamous culture. And all the evidence we have suggests that monogamy is a myth, that there are virtually no... There are many long-standing gay relationships. There are virtually no long-standing monogamous gay relationships.
All right. Now, did you notice this is an openly gay man speaking, okay? This was David Altman, born 1943, Australian academic and pioneering gay rights activist. He was a Fulbright Scholar at Cornell University in the 60s when he met and began working with leading gay activists in the United States. Joey, I want to replay that. I want you to hear what he had to say. Even if some would say it is exaggerated, listen to the picture he paints. Clip number six again.
I'm going to speak now as a gay man, and one of the things about gay male culture is that it is not a monogamous culture. And all the evidence we have suggests that monogamy is a myth, that there are virtually no... There are many long-standing gay relationships. There are virtually no long-standing monogamous gay relationships.
Sad. Very sad. You say, but I know this couple that have been together 45 years, these two men. If they are, and they've been monogamous, they are the massive, massive exception to the rule. As I documented in A Queer Thing Happened to America, and as I'll document in Outlasting the Gay Revolution. But it's not just that. It's that other forms of marriage and relationships should also be validated. And this is Masha Gessen. She's a Russian-American journalist, editor of the Russian language Snob magazine. Listen to what she has to say, clip number seven.
I don't like taking part in creating fictions about my life. That's sort of not what I had in mind when I came out 30 years ago. You know, I have three kids who have five parents, more or less. And I don't see why they shouldn't have five parents legally. I don't see why we should choose two of those parents and make them into a sanctioned couple. Really, I would like to live in a legal system that is capable of reflecting that reality. And I don't think that's compatible with the institution of marriage.
Yep. So what ultimately has to happen is you get rid of the institution of marriage entirely. Friends, this is what happens. This is what happens when you redefine it. You ultimately render it meaningless. I'm grieved, but I'm not discouraged. Be strong. Press into the Lord in prayer. Pray for a holy desperation to come to the church of the nation, for sanity to prevail, for gay activism to expose its soft underbelly, meaning how it will become and it is already a bullying movement. And by redefining marriage, it makes marriage meaningless. And by attacking gender, it undoes foundations of society. Pray that that will all be exposed. And stand together with me. Pray that God will continue to amplify our voice and bring hope and encouragement and courage, while at the same time, we reach out to the gay and lesbian community that will say, you hate us, you despise us, you reject us. But we'll overcome that with love. And ultimately, as they come to know Jesus and are transformed by his grace, that will be the most loving thing we can do. Be sure that you check out our resource offer, my Jeremiah commentary signed with a scripture reference for you, and with it a free DVD of a classic debate I did with my dear friend Dr. James White on predestination, election, and the will of God. My bottom line today, be strong in the Lord, not in your own strength, not in your own courage, not in your own might, but be strong in the Lord. Be renewed in faith and confidence because he is Lord.